88% of the workweek is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise ready AI.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Crossover Podcast, another quarantine edition of the Crossover Pod. Hope everyone is staying healthy. Hope you guys are staying safe and staying inside during this tough time in this country. Got a terrific episode lined up for you. Jared Dudley, Lakers forward, he joins me on the line, and we talk about a whole wide range of topics from the Lakers, how they were playing before the stoppage, to what it felt like to learn that the Nets players had tested positive, and for the Lakers, including Dudley, to have to take those COVID-19 coronavirus tests, to what Jared thinks about the future of the NBA. Will it come back? Should it come back? Will the players embrace it coming back, even if it's a short season that takes place in a central location, like perhaps a Las Vegas? So stick around for that. It's a terrific conversation with Jared Dudley. A little bit later on, Casey Johnson, Bulls beat writer for NBC Sports in Chicago. He joins me to talk about all things Bulls. Chicago is one of the few teams out there right now that is really active. They're trying to find a new top basketball executive. Casey takes us through how we got here with Chicago, to what they're looking for, to where they go next. Great talk with Casey Johnson of NBC Sports in Chicago. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, a very easy way you can support it, head over to Apple Podcast, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to my conversation with Jared Dudley. All right, Jared Dudley is here, Los Angeles Lakers forward, on full quarantine right now, week 4 of the quarantine. Jared, how you holding up, man?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. I mean, for obviously everybody's in a tough situation, staying home, doing some family things that you normally don't get to do during season. So that's been cool, hanging out with my wife and kids. But I just think it's just been tough, man. It's, you're antsy, eager to maybe have a season, maybe not, to try to stay in somewhat conditioning. You know, out here I ordered a Woodway to run, but still no basketball court, still nowhere to shoot, nowhere to lift. And so we're really, really limited, but obviously our country's dealing with something bigger. So I'm trying to balance both, man. So it's been difficult.
Have you ever been, like, you've been an athlete for a long time. Have you ever been this inactive?
Never. I can honestly say never a month, because even when you're done with season and your season's over, you do your exit interview. Even if you don't pick a basketball up for a week or two, you're doing some sort of cardio, maybe play a little pickup, and that maybe not do a workout. This has been tough because from a weightlifting standpoint, if you own weights now, the Lakers did send a care package here that had, a couple of dumbbells of different sizes, a mat, a foam roll, jump rope, bands. But that's just the bare minimum. So from a weightlifting standpoint, and then a basketball, man, every hooper loves just to play basketball. So not to be able to do any basketball work for a month, that's never been happened for me since I can remember, since junior high, elementary.
So, what are you trying to do? I mean, you mentioned some of the equipment the Lakers sent over. I mean, how do you do your best to stay in condition?
So, I mean, one thing I did was right when I had it, I ordered a Woodway. It was a refurbished one. Woodways are basically the best cardio machine that you can have when you're running. And it's basically best for your knees. I think brand new, it's like 10,000. I think I did a refurbished one for 5,500, I think it was roughly. And something that usually every practice facility has one or two. Some have three, and I bought one of those. So you try to do your sprint workout. So I had the different trainers send me different workouts for a long run, what speed you want to do, or hey, Jerry, let's try to do game simulated. If you play anywhere from 10 to 30 minutes, 30 second sprints, 10 second off, 30 second sprints to try to help your wind. But I mean, at the end of the day, it can only help a little bit. The only way to get in basketball shape is playing basketball up and down the full speed. And so for us, you could do stuff to stay active, to not potentially gain a lot of weight or any weight at all. But for us to get back in, even if those skinny guys, to get in basketball shape, you got to play.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, you guys are all like the best athletes on earth. So to take this time off, it's surreal. I mean, one of the things I wanted to ask you about was the Lakers were one of those teams that had to be tested. This was after the Nets tested positive several of their players. What was your reaction when you found out the Nets were players were positive, that you'd have to be tested, and that there was at least a possibility that you could test positive for coronavirus?
I called. You know, I used to play for them. I called a couple of players to see, you know, what was the deal when it happened, to see that, you know, because I know a lot. I mean, if it's one team that I'm tightest with, that I interact with the most, is Brooklyn, because obviously I played there last. So guys like Spencer, Caris LeVert, Joe Harris, even though Kenny Atkinson got fired, Jacque Vaughn, the whole coaching staff still there, the whole training staff. So, I mean, for me, it's like a kumbaya when I played them, because we had such good memories of that last year. So I'm associating with so many different players, high-fiving. And so you get it. It's like, man, I just knew, hey, we're all going to get tested. So then now the process of the testing, when you're driving up, everyone has to stay in their cars. All the cars are all spread out throughout of a parking lot. And, you know, you have this doctor by himself come to you with his gear, like it's in the movie of Outbreak. If anybody's seen these movies, and if anybody's seen these movies, he's coming out with this full shield and sticking like this big Q-tip in your nose. And not to get too graphic, that Q-tip has to go all the way through your nose to your back of your throat to get the swab. So it's very uncomfortable. Lasts about 10, 15 seconds, depending on if you're moving, because you can't really move, even though it's uncomfortable. And then after that, you go home. And now you're just waiting for the results.
And you, as someone getting tested there, you're a family man. Did you have to stay away from your family for that period of time, 2 weeks?
No, I didn't. No, technically I did it because I wasn't showing any symptoms, even though some people that had it didn't. And it was something where if I would have then tested positive, I would have then got away from my family. You're right. Technically, if you're looking back on it, maybe I should have, just because I didn't have not to be able to have that. But it was so new and fresh. Like, I didn't even know what it was or what it even meant if you were positive. Like, it was so fresh in our mind. I know the Rudy Gobert, you know, he had it. He had symptoms. Donovan Mitchell didn't have symptoms. They quarantined him. And so I didn't know people were really getting quarantined. But looking back on it, yeah, maybe I should have. But thank God I was negative. Even for the people that were positive, I think everyone in the NBA has fully recovered. I know we had two players and after our 14 days, the doctor cleared us, and everyone was, whoever had it was fully recovered and now back to stay home orders. But at least we can do walks and get fresh air at least.
I want to get to the future, but you know, as a team, are you guys able to, you know, keep any kind of chemistry going? I mean, even from afar, are there things you're trying to kind of be on the same page with each other?
I mean, I'm not just saying this because I played on many teams and a lot of different areas. This is the best chemistry I've had with a team. Obviously, the 2010 Phoenix Suns was right there. Even last year, if you want to look from everyone liking, you know, hanging out, you know, Brooklyn was like that. But the difference of this team, it's 1 through 15. So yeah, we have a group chat. We talk every day in the group chat. There's not a day that doesn't go by that's not being said. So from a hanging out standpoint, us talking, we have a Zoom meeting that we get to work out. And it's, like I said, it's bare minimum. It's not really doing anything. It's more for the laughs. It's more for the bonding, more just to, hey, how's everybody doing, to see people on there and, you know, say what's up to Caruso and Kuzma. That's really what it is. And so it's not like, from a training standpoint, it's nothing better that you couldn't do on your own, but it's just more of a bonding. So for that, that's the least of my worries. Chemistry, that's the one thing we have over 99% of teams is chemistry, which is rare when you add 9 to 10 new players on a roster.
I'm trying to picture LeBron in a Zoom meeting or in a Zoom workout right now.
Just imagine a man with a do-rag and a big beard, no cut, working his butt. You see, hey, man, if anyone that's a social media king right now, he got more workouts, more TikTok dances. So he be serious to show his face.
Dude, the hair man's a real problem. I shaved my head because we're not going to get any barbers around anytime soon, man. It's just going to be like this.
And most people don't care because no one sees them. But some, unless you got to do a couple interviews or stuff like that. But for the most part, man, it's going to be funny when we finally get out of here.
All right, let's talk for a minute about that. I mean, I guess the first question is, I mean, how disappointed were you and the Lakers about the stoppage? Putting aside, obviously, medically, it had to happen. We all believe that and certainly understand that better now. But at that time, you guys were, right there among the top records, right behind Milwaukee, but playing the best basketball, I would say, from afar, of the season. How did you feel like when this thing kind of came to a grinding halt?
I mean, you got to look at it this way. The top teams get better late in the season. That's just how it works because, for one, they have different levels. That's what difference between us and Philadelphia when I played in the playoffs last year. There's different levels that these top-tier players, these all-stars, these superstars can get to, and they pace themselves, especially the top 5 to 10 ones in the league. Kawhi Leonard pacing himself during the regular season, knowing, hey, playoffs, I'm going to take it to another level. My minutes are going to go up. So for us we were pacing each other at the perfect pace. Braun, AD, the Lakers included, where, hey, we circled that weekend. We knew that was the prime time, playing the top two teams you're most likely going to meet in the playoffs, if not the finals. And so two teams that we've lost to, that we keep hearing we've lost to, one's at home, one's on the road. And so to beat both of them the way we did, it's not just beating a team. It's how we beat them and the fact that we beat them. LeBron guarding their top two players, which no one expected. Us getting contributions from our role players. Us controlling the game versus Milwaukee, winning on the road. I just think that for us was we had a 5-6 game lead where, hey, some of these other teams are jockeying for position. We're jockeying for rest towards the end. So we're going to go in most likely healthier than everybody, more rested than everybody, and then playing our best basketball. So for us, it's a huge disadvantage, but, that's what life is. Sometimes you gotta break through that and have no excuses.
Man, I know we're running out of superlatives to describe LeBron with, but, MVP or no MVP, we have never seen a player have the age 35 season that LeBron has. I mean, does it even surprise you that he's been able to play? I mean, you've gone up against him for your entire career. I mean, that he's still doing this at this stage. I mean, what does that say to you?
Yeah, for me, it's just different because, like you guys, I was from afar. I play against him. You see him how it is. You see him pace it. You see him when he picks and chooses spots, how unselfish he is, how he makes his teammates better. But when you're as a teammate and you see guys like Richard Jefferson, Lance Stephenson just did an article, Kendrick Perkins, is you're there on the day-to-day. And so when you're there on a day-to-day with someone, you see someone's work ethic. I don't care if you're a journalist, a doctor, you see how they put into their craft. And there's no one that puts the hours and the time in the craft of LeBron. And that's not a hype. I mean, if he was a guy that was just naturally talented and said, hey, listen, he's a gamer like Allen Iverson, he doesn't really believe in practice. No, that's not the case. He's the first one in the weight room. He's drenching sweat by the time you get in there. I'm in there an hour and a half before I get my lift. I get my shots too. He beats everybody there. I don't know what that's just his thing. I don't know if he's a morning person. Usually people that have kids and married usually get up a little bit earlier. That's just how it is. Yes. He paces himself in practice because he knows his body. He's not going all out. He's not going playing in there in every single set. No, he's smart how he does it. He practices every day, but he picks and chooses. Hey, you know what? I might have to be out of the scrimmage. Then after practice, he gets his shots and his reps, that fadeaway baseline he does, or that one dribble pull-up, or how he stares a defender down. So to see him do that, to see his leadership, to see how he basically controls a franchise and every moving piece is, it's phenomenal. And so you can only get that if you're a teammate. I was lucky enough to get, my 6 months so far of it.
Do you think the MVP matters to him?
Yes. It's the end of it if he doesn't. I think that he believes he's the greatest basketball player. I think he believes that he's the best basketball player, the MVP. I think his swagger about it, but that's not his goal. I mean, all he talks about, I've never heard him talk about individual. I never heard him saying he leads the league in assists. And no player really says that, but even mentioning it, his whole thing is the championship. He's judged off championships. If you look at all the talk shows, and he knows that, and he knows that that's what he cares about. He wants himself to give himself a chance, but it matters to him about being MVP. It matters to Anthony Davis about defensive MVP. Those athletes don't put in that hard of a work to say, oh, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So looking ahead, Jared, we've got a long way to go. I mean, Adam Silver had an interview this week where he said, look, we don't have enough information to make any kind of predictions on the NBA season. You know, you're a player, you talk to other players. What's the sense among players right now about, you know, if, when, or should the NBA season continue?
I think it's 50-50. It's straight down the line, just because I think it's inconceivable in our minds that, dang, first time of a virus like this, and now it just wipes out everything. And that's basically what it's doing. Now, can it continue with our resources as a country? We've never had to just basically it happen. So I think it's 50-50 because all we hear from the league is, hey, we want to finish the season. We don't mind going into September. It would be different if you heard something different from the league. I know people are talking about the 50% they want to take away compared to the 20%, 5% that we've, you know, countered back. But they want it. They want to play. They have different scenarios to play. They say, hey, shorten regular season, no regular season, shorten playoffs, full playoffs. It all depends on – it's going to depend on, for one, it has to be on one site, Vegas, Bahamas. Obviously, I think everyone zeroed in on Vegas because of the infrastructure. But it's going to come down to society. How does society view it? Hey, do they view it, hey, the testing. Can everyone get tests? Is it just NBA players, just people with money? The NBA is not doing that. They're smart. They want to help move the country along, not hurt it and have a negative PR. So that's what it's going to come down. It's really going to come down to Twitter, social media, fans, the government, CDC, when it comes to the health. And once they get the okay to that, man, they will have one. And the question is time. Can they get that okay before June 15th, 25th? Because you still got to, right when they say it's good to go, we need a month to train, at minimum 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. If not, you can have these star players getting hurt or regular players, and that's what you don't want.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. The time needed to get your bodies back into condition. I mean, ideally, what is it? Is it a month? Is it
a little less than that?
I mean, ideally on everything would be 4 to 6 weeks, and we know we don't have that. So ideally for us, from a money standpoint of playing regular season games and potentially get the playoffs, 3 weeks. Three to four would be, hey, you know what? It's the bare minimum, and it's more, you're doing it more for the money. You're doing more for the money, and more it's for fans to give them something, because you're not doing it for what's best for your body. Because I don't care if you take the best trainers in the world, they would say how long they need to get ready for this. Anyone would say 4 to 6 weeks, and I don't think we'll have that much time.
Yeah, because it'd be catastrophic if you take less time and a player, especially a significant player, winds up with an injury that maybe could have been prevented if you had more time during a training camp. I mean, that would be...
Just think about it. If we start, let's say, mid to late June, we stopped in mid-March, so you have April, May, June. So you have basically saying 3 months of no basketball. Now, maybe some people that have a gym, I've seen Rudy Gobert. I've seen certain players that they're accessible to gyms. Maybe that's 20% of the league, okay? So you got other 80% up to the gym. Maybe they've been doing running on laps. Some places you can't even go to. I can't go to a high school track right now if I wanted to. It's closed down. So you're running on concrete. You're doing on that. Maybe you're on a woodway. Like, to be able to go and practice, in the first week of practice, you're going to have tight hamstrings, rolled ankles. That's just the minimum of no severe injuries, just because you're dealing with that. So that right there is going to hurt your training abilities, man. It's just a tough situation that we're going to try to make the best of it.
Yeah. The other thing I want to ask you about was, you know, it's something, you know, you're right. The NBA wants to start the season. They want to salvage something of it. But do you think there comes a point where if they say, all right, we're into mid-July, we can do like a postseason that's like best of three in these rounds? I mean, is that still something you think that players would accept, or does it become almost too cheap? Would like the championship have an asterisk next to it at a certain point?
That's a great question. I think that half would say it would be an asterisk, half that it wouldn't. I mean, you still got to play the games. We all still have the same situations. Not like one team is practicing, other teams not. We all have the same, you know, going through the same idea. I would say this. I would say players would be, because it's a dollar game, because their revenue right now, they hold 10% of the BRI already. We're most likely going to give them another 25% of our contract. And so they're telling us, hey guys, we could end up playing best of five, let's say for three or four rounds. So roughly how many games could you fit in there? I don't know, let's say 20 games. Let's say you can get 20, 25. That would be an extra how many dollars? So instead of 25% you're giving away from your contract, it's only going to be 15%. Mm. Everyone's signing up for that. You know, so I just think that it's going to be a majority vote. I think players are majority going to vote for that. I just think that that's how it would be. I think the NBA really wants just to crown a champion. Mm-hmm. More than anything, it's that. And if it had to go straight to the playoffs, they would do it. And I think that not only from a money standpoint, because I don't want it to be only about money, it's a huge factor. I think really Adam Silver and the league feel like it's their obligation society-wise to help people have hope, have people have something to look forward to. So yes, money is a huge part of it, but also you hear what Adam Silver said to the Trump when he's on there of trying to help push it before football, maybe before baseball, because if you remember, basketball started the shutdown. One thing about the NBA compared to everything, we don't follow anymore. We lead. It starts with Adam Silver and guys like LeBron, and I think that will be happening. Guys, players will definitely sign off.
So you guys are bracing for the NBA to kind of start garnishing that pay in the next few weeks. Is that right?
I think May 1st. We knew it was coming. The question is, does it come early where you just take 15, 20% of your contract through all the way through October? Or do you wait till August and see if we have a season or not? If they cancel it starting July or August, now they get your whole check. The NBA is going to get their check, which they deserve. You don't play games. You don't deserve the revenue. Everyone's taking a hit. So it's not like owners are trying to get over players. And it's not like players trying to get over owners. The question is how we want to do it. When they offer the 50%, there's no reason for you to take 50% of your salary because, for one, we've already played more than half the season. So that right there makes no sense. So usually negotiations, you start high and you work in the middle. And so it's just business right now.
Yeah, no question. The one thing I was, when I look at this season, people ask me in my own interviews all the time, which player would be most disappointed if the season was lost. It's got to be LeBron. I mean, just given where LeBron is at this stage of his career and how well you're playing.
If for some reason the league can't come back,
this will always be one of the great what ifs because the way you guys are playing as a team.
For sure. And I think that depending on what would happen in free agency, would have Giannis left?
Yeah,
it could be big for him in Milwaukee. Milwaukee is their best chance ever to win a championship. And if they don't have him coming back and the what ifs, and does this mean since they can't, you know, it gets him to sign back, you know, there's a lot of, you know, you're right though, but for sure. I mean, let's be honest with LeBron's age and our team being a lot of 1 year deals. And you know how it is when 1 year deals picking up, you're right. I think it is for us. And I think what's so crazy is most people thought when we first got together, it would take a while. We really basically hit no bumps until December when we had AD rest a couple games. I think we lost three or four in a row. Besides that, it's been a picture-perfect season for us, and we were just ready for now for the playoffs to put the, you know, to put the cherry on top, basically.
Yeah, no question. What about for you, man? Like, you're, you know, one of those one-year type of contracts. I mean, are you looking at – I mean, are you hoping to play beyond this season? I mean, you've clearly got a career in broadcasting at some point waiting for you, but what's
– I mean, listen, I think what I've been stressing to people – for sure, yes, I do want to come back. For me, my goal is always to get to 15 years and stuff. Right now, this is year 13, so me be able to play two more years. And sometimes that doesn't mean playing that much playing time. Obviously, this year I didn't play a lot. The minutes I did play, I was successful. But it's huge value in a vet in the locker room, where especially if you're either on a championship contending team, where a lot of egos like our team has, with the Rondos, the Dwight Howards, Braun, AD, and to be able to, you go through ups and downs of people, we can't play everybody, waiting for your time in practice, getting subbed out quick, and you need a guy, you see the Udonis Haslams, the Juwan Howards, David West in this career. So for me, I think it's perfect here. Now also too is, I know a lot of these GMs think for these young teams that, you know, hey, we're going to lose anyway, but like it happened in Phoenix and these other teams, you see Minnesota's been going through it. If you don't have the right vets, they form such bad habits, and it takes you an extra 2, 3, 4 years for those young players that are so talented. So I could see me back with the Lakers if us either hopefully winning in a shortened season or, hey, they cancel the season. Hey, let's run it back. Why would we not run it back? Or then potentially another team, if something happened where people are looking for vets. You saw Vince Carter play as long as he has, man. It's not about how good you are. It's about how good you can help your team, coaching staff, and young players develop.
And you mentioned Vince. I feel for Vince Carter. Like, he deserves a better ending for a career like that. like than to go out in a regular season game, a meaningless regular season game, you know, in Atlanta. I know he made his last shot, and that's a great moment. I actually talked to him about it, you know, this week, but you know, that's tough. He, like a guy that played 22 seasons, I feel like he deserved a little more.
I'm surprised that NBA didn't do anything for him at All-Star break. Now, I'm not saying he should have had the Dirk Nowitzki and D Wade to air, but it should have been something from his, especially All-Star weekend. He might have the best All-Star weekend of all time with his dunk contest. There should have been some sort of honoring of that. We all know he's a Hall of Famer. We all know what he's done, help Canada, that country, and how it is now basketball, if it wasn't for Vince Carter. And then now, man, just to see it, he's what you're looking for in a franchise player, someone who comes in with one franchise, changes the outlook of a city, and then eventually, once he loses his skills deteriorate, he doesn't become, you know, butthurt about it. He steps up, comes off the bench, 14th, 15th man, whenever he gets it, learning, helping Trae Young. I've heard stories of him helping Trae Young from Grand Hill and et cetera, and it's just an honor to be his teammate once in Phoenix and to see him go out that way. It definitely wasn't the right way.
And he did the impossible, I think. I mean, you can count, Jared, on one hand the number of guys that have transitioned from a top five player, which is what he was at one point in his career, into a 10-year role player. I mean, it's almost like he had two careers, one as a superstar and another as a veteran role player. I can't think of more than a handful of guys, if that, that have actually done that.
I mean, for one, pride. A lot of people are too prideful to not be able to. The love of the game. Some people, if I can't be a star, I mean, I had one was kind of like Grant Hill, but his was because of injuries, you know. I don't think Vince ever had a serious injury where he had to miss, where Grant Hill was a role player in Phoenix for, you know, at least five or six years. I think he did the Clippers 1 year. You're right, man, and it's tough. And his whole thing was he wanted to compete. He wanted to help. Grant Hill helped me. I'm still keeping contact with him. So we still have a good relationship. I mean, I don't play 13, 14 years without him and Steve Nash. Like, and I'm not just saying that. Like, it wasn't because they were all-stars. It's because they were willing to pass on knowledge. All-stars aren't. Like, I played with Shaq. Shaq was funny. It wasn't Shaq was passing knowledge on to me. He was just keeping me laughing and a good, you know, good to be around, man. Certain vets take it to a whole nother level, and Vince is like that. Vince was the first person pregame shooting every time for Sacramento. It was me and him shooting, and he's like, yo, these young boys don't want to work. And it kind of shows you, and sees, I don't want to diss Sacramento, but it shows you why Sacramento hasn't got over that hump. Mm-hmm. If a player of that time, those young players are still there. It takes a certain dedication and a certain leadership that you have to become a playoff team. It's not just talent.
Yeah. I was writing about his last moment there, and it was kind of funny. You know, he checks in, and he stands at the free throw line next to RJ Barrett, who's 19, and the last player who assisted on him was Trae Young, who's 21. So he's double the age of the last two players he kind of crossed paths with, if you will.
It's phenomenal. I don't know if it'll ever be done. I mean, I never say never. And when it comes to sports, 22 years, how injury is, how this league is. I know kids are coming in at 19, but to be what he is, man, and just how and the way he did it with grace, man. He's had no problems. He's been the perfect model citizen, man. I mean, I would love for Toronto, if once he retires, Toronto do something with him next year. It has to be able to. That number should be retired ASAP.
Well, you can get to 22 years. You're almost there, right?
I'm at 13. I'm limping to 15. Listen, are you kidding me? it's a lot of politic game that you have in here, and you're dealing with different stuff like that. GMs and coaches of sometimes it's payroll of not if not – having the best player and wanting to go super young, man. It is, man. That's why I'm going to do really well after basketball. If it's GM, broadcasting, or coaching, I know the system and I know some of the easy loopholes that you have to have in this business.
You should write a book, man. I'm telling you. Number of teams you played for.
Oh, like, number star, of Shaq, Braun, Nash, Chris Paul, Giannis. John Wall, Giannis, Booker. Wait till these guys, wait till some of these young guys I play with come up and are all stars. I mean, obviously Booker and D'Lo made these last couple of years, man, but there's a couple Bradley Beals made it, but man, I've definitely been blessed, man. I want to keep it going.
Last question, Devin Booker, franchise player or more of a secondary star?
Great question. This is my guy. Booker is going to need another franchise go with him. He's not in the LeBron class, KD class, where he could be solely the best player and lead them to a championship. But You give him either A, two caliber all-stars. They don't got to be superstars. He can be the best player. You give him another one where it's a 1B and then another low, maybe not an all-star, maybe a fringe all-star Draymond Green type where depending on your team's record you are, and that's what you need. And so that's not a knock on Booker. He's gotten better, better each year. The thing about him, I can't wait to see, which they did a little bit this year better, is put the right pieces. You saw a huge, like, his numbers are the same, but his shooting percentage are out the world. That only because he has Ricky Rubio. He actually has a point guard that plays the position at a pretty middle to high level of getting him the ball. DeAndre Ayton hasn't reached his peak. He's the key. And so franchise player, but can't be those top five superstars that I've seen so far. But the kid's still young, so it's time to grow. Put up, DeAndre Ayton becomes an all-star. They are a top five team in the West. But Ayton has to become an all-star. He has to become an all-star because they're eventually going to get the pieces. Oubre, they got too many draft picks they can trade. But if Ayton, number one pick, doesn't live up to an all-star, Phoenix is done, and they'll trade these guys eventually.
Yeah, and then the great what-if will be, what if they took Luka Doncic in that spot, like Sacramento?
They'd be in the playoffs this year. That's what if. Listen.
There's no question about that.
Hey, Jarrett, appreciate the time, man. Stay healthy out there, and I'm hoping we get back to basketball, whether it's Vegas, Bahamas. I don't give a damn. I hope we get back at some point in the next couple of months.
Me too, brother. Anytime.
All right, Casey Johnson is here, longtime Bulls beat writer, now working for NBC Sports in Chicago. He is on his 43rd year on the Bulls beat, and he joins me on the podcast. Are the numbers right? 43 years?
I think it's 42, but I'd have to look at it now. I wouldn't expect any appearance with you, radio, podcast, TV, you know, because you're a multimedia star, without you taking a shot at me first. But but yes, I am old and have been doing this a long time. Thank you for having me, Chris Mannix.
Yes, thank you for joining me. I know you're covering one of the few teams that's really active right now, and that's Chicago, which is in the process of looking for a new top basketball executive. And Casey, before I get to what the Bulls are trying to do, try to explain to me, like, how did we get here? I mean, the Bulls are known as one of the more, I mean, I guess loyal is the right word, but they are a very patient organization when it comes to their staffers. I mean, John Paxson and Gar Forman have been around in different capacities for a long time. How did we get to the point where the Bulls decided it was time for a change?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing because obviously I've been pretty deep in the weeds on this story, and even a longtime Bulls beat guy like myself kind of stopped and was amazed at this statistic. So Jerry Reinsdorf, the principal owner of the Bulls, bought the franchise in 1985. In 35 years, he's had two heads of basketball operations, Jerry Krause for 18 years and John Paxson for 17 years. So that's absolutely remarkable. How we have arrived here is early in this third season of a full rebuild. Now we're 3 years out from the Jimmy Butler trade to the Timberwolves, which happened in June of 2017. John Paxson realized this wasn't going well. He was the one pushing for the full rebuild. He thought this was going to be the year where things kind of took off. And the Bulls, even before injuries beset and torpedoed this season, were off to an underwhelming and slow start. So John went to ownership and, you know, basically said, you know, we need to modernize our front office. And John has been a driving force initiating a lot of this change. Now, Michael Reinsdorf, Jerry's son, who is now the team president and COO of the Bulls, likely would have arrived at the same conclusion himself, but and he took the reins from there and has led a wide search, doing background and due diligence on a wide variety of candidates. He's really spent the majority of this season working towards this, and then it accelerated last Friday with Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN and myself then following up with news that they were going to begin the formal search process, and we are into the interview phase this week.
So the power structure right now, or at least before all this began with the Bulls, I mean, John Paxson's obviously at the top, but, you know, nominally Gar Forman is the general manager. I mean, how was it working over this past season, season and a half with that front office.
Yeah, and that's I understand why people get confused, and you know, Garpax is the phrase that's tossed around. And quite frankly, if you want to make somebody within the Bulls blanch, use that phrase, because I mean, they are different people and they have different skill sets and different talents. And the reason why it's murky is, quite frankly, on the Bulls, you know, poor messaging at times. You know, John was completely in the lead from when he first succeeded Jerry Krause in 2003 to about 2009. And then Garb Forman was promoted to general manager, and John stepped away. He had a well-publicized incident with Vinny Del Negro in which they had a brief physical altercation near the end of Vinny's reign as two-season reign as coach. And I've written this before. It's not really that much talked about, but his son decided to enlist in the Marines and was deployed to Afghanistan. And it was a significant personal moment in John's life and career. And he just needed to take a step back. So he was still ostensibly, you know, atop the food chain in terms of his title, executive VP of basketball operations. However, Gar Forman was clearly running the show and was the face of the franchise. Now, when John pushed for the full rebuild as early as June of 2016, when they traded Derrick Rose, if you guys all remember, the Bulls almost traded Jimmy Butler to the Celtics on that draft night in June of 2016. It didn't happen. And then that trade happened a year later, June 2017, to the Timberwolves. And from that moment on, John has taken front and center the responsibility of being the face of the franchise again for messaging. And because he felt, you know, responsibility, because he was the one pushing for the full rebuild. So he's been out front the last 3 years. And, you know, he's just ready for a change. He's going to be involved in as large or as small of a role as the new head of basketball operation wants. I mean, if that, you know, is a senior advisor role like a Kevin O'Connor or a Jerry West or a Rod Thorne, he's fine with that. So we'll see how this plays out, but that's kind of where we're at.
Do you believe that that's functionally possible? I mean, you know, John Paxson, having covered him for a long time, you know, a new GM or a president or whatever the term is comes in and, you know, they're going to want to run their own operation. Will there be any conflict there if John Paxson is still around?
Well, I understand why there's a lot of skepticism and speculation about that. But here's the thing. I think the key point that's getting lost a little bit in this is that John has initiated a lot of the need for this. He's completely fine and willing to take a back seat. I don't know what his new role would be. I would guess something like a senior advisor or what have you. But just look at how the Jazz succession plan worked. I mean, Kevin O'Connor went off into the night, and Dennis Lindsay has done remarkably well in that role. And, you know, then obviously concocted a succession plan similarly with Justin Zanuck being promoted to general manager. John will be even less involved with that. I mean, he won't be around. He won't be at the Advocate Center on a daily basis. And, you know, if the new guy – whoever it is, whether it's, you know, Arturis Karnisovas or Justin Zanuck or somebody else, if he doesn't want John's input or use him as a resource at all, John's cool with that. I mean, John always just wants what's best for the Bulls. He feels an incredibly strong allegiance to this city and this franchise. He's been involved with this franchise since 1985 in some capacity. And, you know, he feels like he can help the person in terms of institutional knowledge, not only with the franchise, but the city, and also how to communicate with the Reinsdorfs. But if the person doesn't want to utilize that resource, John is completely fine with that. And the last thing I'll say, Chris, is look, if they hire somebody to run basketball operations who's worried about, you know, getting John Paxson's approval or how to utilize John Paxson, then the Bulls have failed, because they've obviously got to bring in somebody with their own ideas and their own vision and their own direction, and someone who's comfortable utilizing John Paxson in whatever role he wants him to, without, you know, any worry about long-term ramifications. I mean, this is going to be this person's show.
Mm-hmm. You know, you've reported on this extensively the last couple of days, and the list of names has been out there. They're casting a wide net right now in Chicago, but it sounds like they're whittling down that list significantly, at least as we speak on Wednesday evening. Where do they stand with this search as we talk? And what's your impression of what they're looking for in a new GM?
Yeah, I think one thing that needs to be stressed is what they're mostly looking for is to modernize the front office. And so they want to build depth. I know this first hire is just one step in this process. Now, it's obviously the most critical and important hire because this person is going to head basketball operations. However, the Bulls historically have had an incredibly small front office and a pretty small scouting staff. So they want to build out the infrastructure analytically, player development-wise, scouting-wise. And that's going to be this person's vision. So they're looking for a dynamic leader with kind of expertise in all of those departments so that that person can then hire the right people to help him fill out that vision. And so the simple and short answer is the Bulls just want to get in today's modern NBA. I mean, the Bulls were on cruise control for a long time, quite frankly. Things went well with the Derrick Rose era. They just really haven't found their footing since Rose's knee injuries started piling up. And so it's time for them to kind of modernize the NBA and build out that infrastructure. And whoever they hire as this first most crucial hire will be charged in doing that.
You know, when you look at the roster, there's certainly some really good young players there. I mean, you've got Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Kobe White was having a really solid season before it was stopped. I mean, do the Bulls see this as a team that should be built upon, or does the new GM come in there with the authority to kind of say, all right, I don't believe Zach LaVine is a franchise player. I'm going to move him for something else.
Well, Michael Reinsdorf is running this search, and one thing about Michael Reinsdorf, and this is actually another similarity I would point to the Jazz, even though the Jazz are a small market team and the Bulls are obviously a big market team, is that it's family-run ownership, and they are notorious for being completely hands-off. I mean, Michael Reinsdorf is a businessman, and he runs the business side of the Bulls franchise. So he wants to hire somebody to make all the basketball decisions here. And so that question obviously would be better posed to some of the candidates that they're interviewing. Now, that said, when I'm doing my reporting, and obviously I'm talking to people all around the league while trying to do this reporting, I hear the same thing that you do. This is actually, you know, no matter where the Bulls are at, standings-wise or public relations-wise or image-wise, this is an attractive job for multiple reasons. And I would say that the young talent is one of them. Now, we all know that young teams don't win in the NBA, and the Bulls are headed towards another lottery pick. So I'm not saying they're ready to, like, you know, break out of the rebuild and become championship contenders. But you look at their books, they're clean going into 2021. They've got all their first-round draft picks. They do have some intriguing young talent on the roster. It's a major market. It's got first-class facilities. The Advocate Center, the practice facility, is spectacular. United Center is very modern for being 25 years old. So there are a lot of pluses to this job, and that's why I think, you know, they've had a pretty attractive initial list of candidates, some of whom obviously are either being retained by their franchises or choosing to stay in their current situation.
And you said something interesting a couple of minutes ago where it's, you know, the roster and the team itself. I mean, like, John Paxson, did he really think this was a year that they could break through? I mean, just, you know, in the preseason, I looked at the Bulls. All right, maybe you can be a playoff contender, but I mean, I didn't see them as any kind of threat. I mean, how disappointed was Paxson in the way this season has gone, and why do you think those expectations were so high?
Well, first of all, I think we need to pause and not acknowledge that. I think that's the first time you've ever complimented me.
Because
I think
that's true.
So I think I'm not sure I'm going to be able to answer your question because I'm kind of staggered by that. But,
I'll get back to an insult in a minute. Don't worry.
Okay, please. No, all I would say is, yeah, I completely agree with you that I think I maybe should reframe that. They weren't expecting to be, like, you know, contenders for the Eastern Conference Championship, but what they expected to be in year three of the rebuild, particularly with the additions of a pretty, you know, widely under the radar praised offseason with their moves of Thaddeus Young and Tomas Satoransky, they were expecting to at least be relevant again. And quite frankly, this season's been a train wreck. I mean, you know, it's been filled with guys miscast in roles and guys complaining about their roles and injuries and, you know, some bright moments in terms of Kobe White's emergence and Zach LaVine, I think, taking another step closer to all-star status. But they're not you know, I just look at when John Paxson first took over in 03, and by 05, he had built a team that the city was proud of. I mean, I'm not saying like Luol Deng and Kirk Heinrich and Ben Gordon and Andres Nocioni and Chris Duhon were going to, you know, win championships, but they were winning 45, 50 games and competing in the playoffs on a yearly basis. And the city really rallied around those teams. And that's what the internal expectation was this season, a team that fought night in, night out, was competitive. And, you know, there were just too many nights where it was kind of off the rails this season.
Yeah, no question. A couple other things. Gar Forman, you know, you mentioned John Paxson will be involved in whatever capacity the new top executive wants to be involved. Where does that leave Gar Forman? Is he in the same position where the new executive will decide his fate, or is he likely to stick around no matter what?
No, I would say that Gar's situation is a little trickier because even before this happened, Gar has kind of moved into more of just kind of a primary scouting role. Now, that's always been his biggest skill set and biggest strength. I mean, I think no matter what you want to say about Gar Forman, because I know he can be a polarizing figure, I think everyone would agree he's a strong talent evaluator. I mean, he's behind draft picks like Taj Gibson and Jimmy Butler deep in the first round that, you know, had wildly either lengthy or successful NBA careers or both. So, you know, he's under contract. My sense is that the Reinsdorfs will say, hey, if you want to stick around and scout, you can. But the reason why I think his situation is a little trickier, I can see his presence maybe being a little bit more of a sticking point for this new hire. And I'm just speculating there. I can't speak for any of these new candidates' mindsets. But, you know, I would think that, you know, there's a chance that he might be, you know, trying to latch on with another team in a scouting capacity beyond this season.
He does. You're right. I mean, if the Bulls, if they had done everything else as well as they draft players, they'd probably be in pretty good shape right now. I mean, they're very good at identifying talent in key spots and finding them there.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's like I even think back because as you brought me in, because I'm like 75 years old, I think back to like the – I think back to the 2008 draft. I mean, everyone thinks like Derrick Rose over Michael Beasley was a slam dunk, but it wasn't. I mean, I remember multiple people telling me, oh man, Beasley's the guy. Beasley's the guy. So like, not only have they found value in the back of the first round, they also, you know, didn't screw up top picks. I also remember a huge draft day discussion about Joakim Noah over Spencer Hawes, and they got that one right. So not that Spencer Hawes is a bad player, but Joakim was better. So, you know, I think anyone would agree, no matter what you want to say about the John Paxson, Gar Forman regime, I think they've drafted very well over the years.
What do you remember about the decision-making with the Bulls about Norm Van Leer in 1969? I know you were doing an inside piece on the War Room then. Do you recall that, those discussions?
Let me check my tweet. Oh, wait.
Check my notebook.
Last question for you. Obviously, the fate of Jim Boylan falls under the umbrella of the new top executive as well. But, you know, Boylan was always a curious choice for that job because he takes over Fred Hoiberg, and it's not like he set the world on fire. It wasn't like Frank Vogel with the Pacers when he took over Jim O'Brien where they made a run at the playoffs. I mean, he clashed with you know, some of the young players. There was that whole goofy like leadership committee thing that went on in Chicago. You know, what was it they saw in Jim Boylan, and how do you think he performed this year with what they had?
Well, you know, the biggest backers of Jim Boylan were Michael Reinsdorf and John Paxson. So what they saw was somebody who was a teacher and communicator in practice and somebody who held players accountable. And you know, as we all know in pro sports, you often go 180 kind of the other way. And so his personality was very different from Fred Hoiberg. So when Fred was let go and they already knew Jim's personality, they felt that Jim could, you know, handle a lot of the issues facing the team. I personally, you know, last season was very bumpy. There's no doubt about that. I think by the end of last season, Jim had kind of found his footing and kind of gotten to a better place with players, particularly because you can say what you want about Jim Boylan, his care factor. And I know that sounds like sappy and cliche, but it's like ridiculously off the charts, man.
Sure.
The dude like just cares so much about players succeeding. And he, it's almost like over the top, like college rah-rah stuff, but it's like genuine. It's who he is. So I think he got to a good place. And then I think he made a pretty crucial mistake earlier in the season. He removed Zach LaVine singly and very transparently for a defensive mistake, just in a one-person substitution, like three or – I'd have to look it up. It was either 3 or 5 minutes after tip-off. Mm-hmm. It was the night before Zach exploded for the 49 points and 13 three-pointers in a ridiculous road victory in Charlotte. It was a home game against the Heat. And, you know, that really set – that really set a tone for just some questionable things that have happened throughout the season. Jim is unconventional. You know, his late game timeout usage has drawn multiple headlines this season. I will say that from John Paxson and Michael Reinsdorf's viewpoint and estimation, he has done a lot of what they've asked him to do. He's held players mm-hmm. accountable. He's taught in practice. He's had a teaching component. There have been some guys developing under his watch. But look, we all know how pro sports work. You know, if you're given a lead executive position for the first time, invariably you're going to want your own coach in place. Whether that happens now, 6 months from now, next season, I can't answer that. I can't speak for these, you know, candidates' mindset. And also, this is all complicated, as we know, by the NBA calendar kind of getting disrupted and the rhythm of the season in flux with the COVID-19 virus. So I personally think ultimately there will be a new coach in place. When that will be, I can't speak to that.
It does seem like the Bulls are, it seems like they're trying to be aggressive with hiring this top executive. Is there urgency there? You know, as we speak on Wednesday night, I mean, you know, it seems like they've, you know, Arturis Karnisovas is going in or in talks for a second interview. Justin Zanuck is right there. What's their, I mean, how aggressive are they trying to be with, you know, securing this position?
Well, they want to get it right. So I would think maybe late this week, early next week, you're going to see this first hire wrapped up. I mean, you've alluded to it yourself. I mean, the Bulls are a methodical, patient, loyal franchise. So They don't move incredibly slowly. But as I mentioned also before, you know, Michael Reinsdorf has been working on this a long time. So it's not like anything that's happening right now is surprising him. And that's why I know there was some initial reaction or backlash to some of these names either dropping out or deciding to stay put with their current situations, or teams kind of moving to retain their guys, like, you know, Heat did with Adam Simon, or the Raptors sound like they're going to be doing with Bobby Webster. But none of this caught Michael Reinsdorf off guard. I mean, I talked to somebody from another team yesterday who said, like, look, this guy did his homework, man. That was a really attractive initial pool of candidates. So, you know, some guys did either drop out or are off limits. And so he moved on Karnisovas and Zanuck for now. He's also had talks with Brian Colangelo and Wes Wilcox. And I think more of a cursory call with Danny Ferry. So he's done his homework, and he's been ready for this moment. And, you know, now at some point they're going to have to move into negotiations on a deal. And as we know, that can present some hurdles, but I would think, just, you know, informed guessing here, late this week, maybe early next week, you're going to see this first hire wrapped up.
So does your reporting indicate that the Bulls did their homework when they traded Clem Haskins for Jim Fox in 1970? What was your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are, you have a media guide in front of you, because there's no way in hell you knew that deal.
I got Basketball Reference up in front of me with the Bulls draft picks from the last 40 years, trying to figure out what was the first Bulls draft that you covered.
All right. The first draft I covered was, it was a very memorable one, because it was, the first draft I covered as a lead beat guy was 03, and it was memorable mm-hmm. because Jay Williams wrecked his motorcycle like 2 days before the draft. And so the Bulls selected Kirk Heinrich. But I was around the franchise from 96 to 2003 as like a secondary beat guy. So I just revealed my age.
My old boss at SI had such a thing for like Jay Williams. Every time Jay Williams like announced a comeback, I'd have to drive to New Jersey to go sit with them and write like a 1,000-word story on Jay Williams' latest comeback. It got to the point where I'd be like in his house in Jersey, like discussing the latest attempt at coming back.
It's like, hey, come on in, Chris, you again?
here we go. Here's the news. Here's what's happening right
he
now.
He played in a G League game, didn't he? Didn't he play in like one G League game? I can't remember.
All I remember was one of his last workouts was with like Toronto, and I remember calling the Raptors executive. They're like, "Man, the side to side movement's just not there. Like he can probably still succeed offensively, but you know the leg injury just deprived him of any of that lateral movement. Too bad though. As a career, that was you know totally. He would have been a good player.
Yeah, no doubt. He had a very strong rookie season.
Yeah, excellent. Hey, strong appearance here, Casey. I know you're busy these days trying to get on top of this story. Thanks for joining me here on the podcast.
I enjoyed it, Chris. Thank you very much.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.